Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Well, somebody yell at Bob because he's not here. He's on Twitter at BSU Bob if you want to yell at him. He ain't here, so Darren College is in instead. What's up, Darren?
Oh, I'm excellent. Filling in for Bob. I mean, if anybody can find Bob.
You guys kind of look the same. Psych. Michael Fisher over there. My name is Chris Lewis. Yo, Darren, I don't know how you football players play on injured ankles, by the way. JP's making fun of me for how I'm just, like, hobbling all over the place. I rolled my ankle yesterday playing hoop, and, yeah, I can't even walk.
If anybody looks like Bob right now, it's you.
Oh, yeah, because I'm saying Bob can't walk. Yeah,
Bob looks a lot older than I do, and you look real old.
That's
right
what
now.
He looks real like old. When he's carrying his broadcast equipment in and out of Taco Bell Arena. He's kind of wobbling with this huge case that looks like a threatening thing that would be on an airplane. Just within the hour, Chandler Hutchison was talking to the media. Chandler, of course, the Boise State basketball player, who still is a Boise State basketball player, although he at one point declared for the NBA draft, but did not hire an agent and ended up coming back to Boise State last year, averaged just over 17 points per game, shot around 50% from the field, and really took off, averaging 8 rebounds, kind of filling the James Webb role from the year before. Chandler Hutchison went through that process, ended up coming back to Boise State, and this was what he said about his experience through that process.
I was able to do a couple workouts, and you know, the feedback is something that not a lot of people get, and that's one of the, you know, benefits from being able to do that. You know, it was cool to hear some of the stuff I had already kind of known and have been already working on, and then also to hear stuff from, you know, NBA guys of little things like, you know, the weight, the body weight, and the kind of the size and type of stuff that they see with my body shape and everything. But, yeah, it was cool to do that. And then basically I was, even after those workouts, I was here for about a week after that and was still able to, you know, when no one else was really here, to continue to work and kind of gain an advantage that way. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, just from my knowledge and the people around me and coaching staff, I just knew that, you know, I still believe there's a lot of things I can continue to get better at, you know, just continue to work on that, extending that range and the shooting range and just getting stronger playing through contact because, you know, NBA is a grown men's league. And you don't want to let emotion with all the things of, you know, wearing the NBA workout gear and talking to those guys and being in those arenas convince you to put yourself in a position where you might not be ready to be right away. So I just felt like where I was, and I mean, if I look at it a year from now, how much better I can continue to get based on the stuff that I know now and what I've already worked on and seeing that jump, I believe it could be a, you know, an even bigger jump to put myself in a better position a year from now.
Again, that was Chandler Hutchison talking about his process of going through the NBA draft workout phase, although not going into the draft after he decided to come back to Boise State, never did hire an agent. This is Idaho Sports Talk, Chris Lewis, Darren College. And that's the unique thing, I guess, about the NBA versus the NFL process, where once you kind of commit, you have to go through the process. You have to hire an agent. You don't have that thing where you declare and then you're able to come back. That's the positive change that the NCAA/NBA kind of put in a couple of years ago, which allows these players to go through the process of getting the feedback, go through a couple of the workouts, and if you like what you hear or don't like what you hear, regardless, you can still make that decision to come back to college and improve your draft stock.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for somebody like Chandler Hutchison. I mean, for most guys, I really wish it was an opportunity for NCAA football players too. Because it's not only a chance for those players to really learn something new, but it's a chance for those teams to start getting an early hands on a guy. And for Chandler, like, he's getting some great coaching here, but the things he learned there are going to be in value. Stuff that, you know, NBA coaches want to see, what he needs to improve on. Like, hey, your workout's great on this aspect, but here and here's where you need to improve. And he can bring that back and say, hey, coach, these are the places I need to work on. They think I need to work on. I want to continue to work on those with you. I want to grow as a player. I want to make myself better. And that stuff he can bring down to his other teammates that maybe didn't have that opportunity. He can pass on that information. So the fact that he hasn't had to hire an agent and gets to go do those workouts, I mean, that's invaluable to him. And it gives him a great head start on what he's going to go through again next year.
And he did mention like some of the things that he got the feedback on what he needs to work on.
Yeah.
And I remember, I don't know if he said it specifically in that answer, but I know he said it in the release when it was announced that Chandler was coming back to Boise State. He mentioned the shot needs to improve or get more consistent. He needs to add to the range on the three-point shot. He shot 38% last year from deep, but on less than 70 attempts, so it wasn't really the large sample size from behind the arc. But it brings up an interesting case, and you being a former NFL player, I feel like you're somebody who could get insight on this process of trying to achieve individual goals, because remember, Hutchinson on NBA draft day tweeted 365 days, which I interpreted as 365 days from now, it'll be me as one of the guys who will be drafted. So this is clearly something that he has a goal in mind. But how do you show some of the things that you're trying to improve upon if the team scheme doesn't allow you to show those certain skills? And I'm not saying that like he's limited in the Boise State offense. I don't know what Boise State's going to look like next year, but he didn't shoot that many threes last year. There are instances where Hutchinson and the sets that the offense has for Boise State, where he's getting the ball low post or high post, not beyond the 3-point line. It'll be interesting to see if he gets the opportunity to put up more three-pointers to show how he's increased the range, because you can't put something on tape that your scheme doesn't allow you to do. And in the NFL, where you have free agency and you have contract incentives, you have that situation come up too, where there's individual motivation and incentive for you to show certain skills that maybe the team isn't letting you be able to showcase out on the field.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could be, you know, they could be like, hey, we need more of a power, you know, run blocking out of a guy like an offensive lineman like me, and be like, well, I run a zone scheme. Like, I'm not going to do that kind of blocking. So that's a challenge. I think as a basketball player, you have a little bit more individual freedom to kind of, you know, if he needs to shoot better from range, he's just going to have to work on that and show his time. And again, usually they're going to say if you win games and you have a successful team and you make the guys around you better, that's the ultimate goal. But you look at a guy like Markel Fultz, who was drafted number one overall, went to a team that did nothing last year, and he was able to go number one overall. So there has to be some individual success there. And he said he's got to have a little bit better range, and he's got to grow stronger as a player, especially with the ball in his hand and in traffic. He says he's stepping into a grown man's game. That's stuff that he can bring out at BSU. And, you know, if he becomes a better shooter from outside and gets more range, I got a feeling BSU is going to allow him to have that opportunity here. So he's just got to continue growing as a player. Hopefully BSU is able to work around that, but the NBA knows that. And if he works on those skills all season, even if he's not able to do it in the game necessarily every single weekend and week out, when he goes back to those workouts again next year, he's going to be able to show, hey, I've grown as a player here. You have my tape from last year. You have my workouts from last year. Here's where I am this year. Here's the improvements I've made. Now give me the chance to do it in your system, and I'll show you how much more I can grow.
And you mentioned, like, Boise State, the way they play, it does allow more, you know, player empowerment, if you will, more freedom. Like, he'll have his chances to shoot for some threes for sure. But, like, there's also, he's one of the few players who can rebound at a high level and can be on the interior at a high level as well. Boise State does have other players, you know, coming back on the roster who are certainly capable of hitting perimeter shots. Just not all of them are able to do a lot of the other things that Chandler Hutchinson can do. So you don't necessarily want him just hanging around the 3-point line all game shooting threes. But, like, this reminded me of a contract incentive situation that a quarterback had this past year. Now, he didn't really get a chance to have this be something that he had a chance to achieve because he was hurt, but the Robert Griffin III had a contract incentive where if his quarterback rating was between like 85 and 89, he would get a certain bonus in the contract. When you are dealing with quarterback rating, you can sort of play in a way to manipulate that number by a lot of short passes with a high completion percentage, even though you're perhaps on a 3rd and 14, instead of trying to push it for the first down, completing a 7-yard out, that will help the quarterback rating, but it won't help your team pick up the first down. So, and then also be more careful with the ball. If you're not pushing the ball down the field and risking interceptions, there's a better chance your quarterback passer rating can be higher. So that kind of reminded me of a situation where just because you have an incentive or an individual number in mind, that doesn't necessarily mesh with the team goal. So at a point, that can become a conflict, right? If you have something in your contract that says, all right, between 85 and above, that's going to be more money for me. However, Hugh Jackson might want me to push the ball down the field a little bit more, but this could cost me money because it's a more risky play.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I've played with wide receivers that have contract incentives based on catches and yards and touchdowns, who have came to the quarterbacks in practice and been like, hey, man, I need a couple more passes this week. I need a touchdown, or, you know, can you look my way because I'm trying to, I got to make my bonus. Guys are trying to take care of themselves, and the quarterback's sitting there going, you know, we've got a game plan we're trying to run, but, you know, if I could try to feed you, I'll try to help you out. Because, you know, coaches know and GMs know that, hey, we got guys that are in a situation where they can earn a lot more money. If we got a chance to shelf them, we don't need them, we can do it. I mean, look, Marshawn Lynch is a perfect example of that right now. The contract he signed with the Raiders, everybody says it's a great contract. It's a big number, but a lot of his money's tied up in incentives. A 31-year-old running back who splits time with another solid running back, you know, he's got, like, MVP incentive. He's got 1,000-yard incentives. He's got 12-touchdown incentives. And those are millions of dollars by the time you add them all up. I mean, what are the chances that the 31-year-old Marshawn Lynch, no, Marshawn's getting the ball on the 2-yard line for sure. Nobody's making that mistake again. But I don't see Marshawn Lynch rushing for 1,500 yards this season.
Yeah, so that'll be a difficult one to achieve. That's just one of those fascinating things, individual goals within a team concept. And if they conflict, how exactly is that situation managed? Not saying it'll be that difficult here with Boise State, because, again, a lot of the goals with Chandler Hutchison match the goals that Boise State basketball wants to have for next season. Cascade Raft and Kayak offer a half-price suite deal at KCIK.com. It's this Friday, which is tomorrow at 9 in the morning. A half-day raft trip down the Rush on the Lower South Fork from Garden Valley to Banks. The 8-mile section of Rollicking Rapids launches you into an unforgettable whitewater experience. Again, it's KTIK.com. Tomorrow, 9 in the morning. You can get that trip for only $27.50. Up next on Idaho Sports Talk, Darian Thompson, Dante Dion, different situations with the New York Giants, but both members of a secondary and looking for more playing time. What's at stake for them? James Cratch of NJ.com joins us next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Bob Beeler is out, so former NFL player Darren College is joining us on Idaho Sports Talk. Michael Fisher, Chris Lewis here. On IST, through the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about the Boise State players who are either established or looking to become established on the certain NFL teams and what exactly their current situation is. So let's go to New York, where the Giants have a couple of members of their secondary who have Boise State ties. Of course, Darian Thompson and Dante Dion. James Cratch of NJ.com, he's a Giants beat writer there. He joins us now on Idaho Sports Talk. James, we appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
Doing well. So Darian Thompson and Dante Dion, they were, you know, both members of the Giants secondary, both expected, you know, different things last year, but both injuries became a story of their 2016. So I guess we start with what's the latest on their health?
Yeah, no, both guys have been kind of, you know, ready to go. Darian Thompson obviously had season-ending foot injury, lip strike injury. I think he suffered it in week two of last year. Tried to come back, just never really got off the ground, didn't even really get to fully participate in a practice.
Then we're losing him. All right, we'll try to give him a call right back and get a better connection there. But he was talking about how Darian Thompson, after the second game of the season, I think he played, what, 82 snaps in the first two games, and then after that missed the rest of the season with an injury. And that's kind of the way it goes in the league in terms of, you know, opportunity was there. Landon Collins was one established safety with the Giants, but that other safety spot was up for grabs. Thompson, with a good camp, kind of earned it and was expected to have a large role. And it's funny how things can turn at the drop of a hat like that.
Yeah, really tragic how things can turn. I mean, you've worked that long, gotten your opportunity, made the most of your opportunity, and the next thing you know, something planting a foot in the wrong direction or getting stepped on can do it. I've had buddies that I played with that finally are in their starting spots. Looks like Thompson's going to have a second opportunity to go back out and reprove himself, and right now sits at the top of the roster as the starter, says you know, Coach Ben McAdoo. But it's one of those things I've seen it turn around and go the total opposite way. Guys that were going to be starters get injured, somebody else takes that role, and they never become a starter again. So it's good to see that he's back there working and having a lot of success.
We remember the you know, Darian Thompson we saw here, certainly a ball hawk, last line of the defense type of guy, with Landon Collins, who's as aggressive as he is with the Giants. It would have been almost a perfect fit if he was able to stay healthy. I think we have James Cratch back. And, James, we were talking about the injuries that Thompson and Dion had to overcome before you kind of got cut off there. So what about the latest on their health?
Yeah, so Darian Thompson, I don't know what you guys heard, but, you know, he was kind of slow with him, obviously, in the offseason program. That's a good sign. Even though the Giants are kind of isn't really ready, if you put him on the field, that's a good sign. Now, Dante Dion, it was kind of a really quick thing for him. He had the practice squad last year, and he got banged up, and all of a sudden he got put on practice squad IR. only been covering the NFL, it's my third season. I didn't know practice squad IR existed. And it was funny, we bumped into Dante in the locker room. He goes, I didn't know this existed until they told me I was on it. So, but I think his was just a minor situation where they wanted to make the pro and lose him. So,
all right, I think we got to cut this out. So close. We got a little bit there.
Yeah.
They didn't know that this IR practice squad thing existed. But, yeah, I think we had to go on that one. But, see, the thing is that's frustrating about it is because I kind of do want to know what the Giants thought of Thompson when he actually had a chance to play. And with Dante Dion, it seems like every article that I read coming out of Giants camp, and since they're in New York, they have like 18 trillion publications, so there's never any shortage of information of Dante Dion. It seems like every time there's an OTA or they're in shorts, he stands out. So, I mean, these are two guys in different situations there with the Giants, but both you get a lot of information on, so I kind of want to get that firsthand knowledge of it.
Yeah, you want to talk to somebody that's in the mix, because New York's one of those rare places, like you said. You got 17 different, it seems like, beat writers covering it. You got every single newspaper's covering it, and each one's kind of a different angle. It's hard to always get a story there. I think, you know, for Dion, it's going to be showing out not just in the shorts. You know, I think plenty of coaches talk about that. Hey, he shows out in shorts. He doesn't in pads. Thompson's kind of shown that, hey, he can be the guy. He's ready to go. This is kind of Dion's chance to step up, but he seems to be making plays from everything that I've read. He seems to be having a lot of success, and hopefully he's going to have an opportunity. And I think it's rare to have a chance having two BSU guys in one backfield. It's going to be an awesome, you know, there's going to be some fans around here.
Yeah, Thompson could very well be a starter. For Dion, what you're reading is he's gotten a couple of first-team reps at the slot corner position, which I guess when you're physically limited like he is, you know, maybe a buck 60, 5'9", if you're pushing it, that's not your size of a typical NFL defensive back.
No,
so,
not anymore.
If you're able to play the slot corner position, I correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, but you're typically going up against the smallest receiver that's on the field if you're playing a slot guy.
Yeah, usually, and offenses are looking to try to shift guys around and move you in a situation where you're going to be up against somebody bigger than you, either a tight end or, you know, they're going to move guys around. But you're going to be in a lot of nickel sets. You're going to be in a lot of dime sets. That's going to be his opportunity to be out there to try to make plays and hopefully fly around. And a guy that size, you're hoping to kind of just disappear on the field and hopefully somebody doesn't see you.
It's time to tailgate with Caves and Prater. It's this Friday from 3 to 6 with a live edition of Idaho Sports Talk. If you're near Boise State Friday afternoon, watch the show and have a happy hour refreshment and a big bite to eat. That's Caves and Prater at the Tailgate Sports Bar off Capitol at the entrance to Ann Morrison Park this Friday, 3 to 6 on Sports Radio The Ticket. We'll try to connect with James Cratch up next, plus a sports update that's coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Through the wonders of modern technology, we're going to try again with James Cratch. Darren College is in for Bob Beeler. Chris Lewis here on Idaho Sports Talk. James Cratch, the Giants beat reporter for NJ.com, on the line. Do we got you?
I think I'm here. I've now rigged so my cell phone is on an internet line.
All right. We're solid, at least I hope. Knock on wood. All right, Darian Thompson, he played in a couple of games before he got hurt last year. When he was on the field for those two games and 82 snaps, how did he look?
He was in the offseason program, not so much, I think, during the games. He looked really good in the games. And in the offseason program, kind of leading before he got hurt for the first time, he was head and shoulders above the rest of the safeties kind of competing for that job opposite Landon Collins. The Giants, they love him. They think he's going to be a real player. They have been nothing but cautious with his foot and everything, you know, kind of bring him along slowly because, you know, they're kind of treating him like fine china. They think he is going to be a major impact player for them potentially. They don't want to take any risks. They're very high on him, and I think that when him and Collins are paired together, given Darian's kind of, you know, ball hawking center fielder abilities as a safety, that could kind of give the Giants defense a new element. It also could help Collins, who had a sensational all pro season last year, be even better.
So Collins played solid. Thompson was out. Who replaced Thompson, and with that replacement, how did they really mesh together? Because as a player who played before, you know, I never wanted to be injured because I didn't want somebody to take my job. So, you know, was there any shine without him out there?
You know, the Giants, it was one of kind of the great stories last season. They had a kid named Andrew Adams, undrafted rookie out of UConn. He actually was a big-time baseball player. He grew up in Atlanta. He was going to go play baseball, Division I at Furman. He got an offer from UConn. He ended up switching gears, going playing football. He had a solid training camp, kind of really came on strong at the end. Was a guy who was maybe, you know, in the last, you know, five or six cuts. They got him through the practice squad, He gets promoted to play special teams in week three against the Redskins. He has an egregious personal foul on a, playing special teams on a kickoff. You know, just kind of goes helmet to helmet, away from the play, 15-yard penalty that kills the Giants. They lose that game. A lot of people think, okay, this guy is going to get cut Monday morning. The Giants don't cut him. Obviously, Thompson goes out. I believe right before the Giants' week four game, you know, they had a bunch of tryouts of veteran safeties. They didn't sign any of them. They let Adams start in week four, and he was really kind of a revelation for them. I mean, obviously, I think he's a little bit more of a, you know, up-against-the-line strong safety guy like Landon is, but he managed to play that free safety well enough. I think the Giants kind of protected him in their scheme. He had a really solid year for them. Didn't really kill them. But I think that, you know, they say that him and Thompson are going to compete for a job, but I think if Darian's healthy, given what we saw last year, he really shouldn't have much of a trouble winning that job.
James Cratch, NJ.com, Giants beat reporter, joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. Shifting from one Boise State guy in Darian Thompson to another in Dante Dion. Last year, he kind of shined in the OTAs before getting on the practice squad and then going to injured reserve. How has he looked so far in OTAs this year?
He's looked good, and I think last year it was going to be a tough pill for him to kind of make the team. I thought it was kind of an uphill time. This year, I think he's got an even better shot. You know, the Giants, a lot of people know about Janoris Jenkins, Dominique Rodgers, Cromartie, Eli Apple, their three main cornerbacks. They don't have much depth, established depth behind those three guys. So you talk about, you know, usually they carry five cornerbacks. There's probably going to be two jobs kind of, you know, way up for grabs in camp this year, and Dion's one of several guys competing for that. But I mean, the Giants, they love Dante Dion. The fans, the team, Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator, when you mention him in a press conference, his face just lights up. And, you know, my partner Dan Duggan and I would cover the team. We learned that, and you guys can kind of speak to this better than I can, it seems like Dante was kind of the popular guy around town because, you know, during training camp, he'll tweet out pictures and little video snippets of guys in action. And Dante Dion videos and photos would get hundreds of retweets and likes. I mean, we're talking more than like Eli and Odell would. So I think that there's clearly Dante Dion has become a fan favorite for a guy who really, you know, hasn't played a whole heck of a lot. He was a blast at a charity softball game, Landon Collins, a couple weeks ago. You know, Dante, you know, he kind of crushed the ball to the wall. He's dancing in the box before, like, and then someone like this point, that's when you got to run to first base. So, you know, he's kind of a fun-loving guy who's kind of gotten a following, even though he hasn't been a whole lot on the field. But I think the Giants are hoping to see him kind of do more, and there's going to be an opportunity there for him, I think.
Staying on Dion, I mean, kind of look at his size. Everybody kind of talks about that slot corner position. They used to be kind of where they hid backup, you know, cornerbacks at the time, nickel and dime packages, but really with the spread offenses that are coming out now it's really a primary position. You see that as where Dion's staying? One of the guys that I played with, that I look at like that, is a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, whose list is a safety, but more plays, you know, your slot cornerback position. You know, kind of, you see that same role?
I think he could be. I mean, that's, you know, basically your slot corner is basically your starter now. I mean, Giants mostly have three cornerbacks out there. And then obviously, Dominique Rodgers Cromartie is the guy who's probably there to start, but they do need to find someone. You know, they had Cody Sensabaugh last year. He signed with the Steelers. That was kind of a big blow. So I think Dion's a guy who could be in the slot. A guy from played at Texas who's had, you know, injuries his first years in the league. Mykel Thompson's in the mix there. Oklahoma State kid Michael Hunter. But I do think we didn't see a whole heck of Dion in the slot. They've also brought in Valentino Blake, who was with the Titans last year. I don't know if they necessarily look at him as the main slot. I think he will play there some, but we've mostly seen Dion working on the outside.
James Kratz of NJ.com, Giants beat reporter. We appreciate the updates on the Boise State guys, and as training camp hits and the preseason, I'm sure we'll holler back at you.
You got it, guys. Hopefully I'll have better reception then.
We got you. It ended up working out. James Kratz of NJ.com. The updates on Darian Thompson and Dante Dion, of course, throughout this week and next. Idaho Sports Talk will be taking a look at some of the Boise State players in the NFL looking to establish themselves or already established.
The Ticket Sports Update.
We're going to start the Ticket Sports Update with guy from New York, playing for a New York team, a little bit more famous than Darian Thompson and Dante Dion, and that would be Chris's favorite minor league baseball player, Tim Tebow. His debut for the St. Lucie Mets was taken away from us yesterday after rain canceled it. Monday, doubleheader yesterday. Tim Tebow, I feel like he's done it every other stop he's played, the fall league, low A, hit a home run in his first day of action. Now, this wasn't technically the second game. Two-run home run. Tebow ended the doubleheader 3-for-5 with a home run and two RBIs. I'm surprised he isn't in Double-A at this point after that. And he passed Michael Jordan for career home runs with 4.
There's a list.
He's the GOAT. He passed Michael Jordan. LeBron James can't pass Michael Jordan. Nope. But Tim Tebow can pass Michael Jordan.
Now, I don't know enough about this to be totally honest from transition. Will he be the most successful former NFL player in baseball?
No, right? Like, you got...
Who left?
Bo Jackson.
Bo Jackson, but how long did Bo play
Deion
for?
Deion Sanders? I still feel like those guys...
They played in the major leagues.
I guess that's true. He's on track.
Yes, he's on track.
He'll play in the major leagues. Don't worry. September, the Mets will have nothing better to do.
He's selling enough jerseys. Somebody's going to pick him up.
Why, though? Why?
Because he's selling enough jerseys. If we've established anything, this is a money game. This isn't about quality of what's on the field. This is a money game.
But at this point, I'm wondering, like, what attract... I'm sure if, like, Tim Tebow came to Boise, it would be, hey, Tim Tebow's here. Let's all go to the ballpark.
If Tebow goes to Seattle, I'm booking a flight.
Yeah,
and no, I'm going to that game.
No, this is crazy. Like, we usually... want to see somebody who's capable at it. I mean, I guess he's capable.
Oh, he's going 3-for-5 with a knock. I mean, most people take 3-for-5 with a knock.
But he's still a 220 fringe hitter with
maybe he
limited
was just
with
playing
good power, I guess, if he ever connects on the ball.
Maybe
but he strikes out so much.
He's playing down the level of his competition.
All right, so you bring him up to the major league.
He's hitting 600 right now in high A.
can he throw anybody out from the plate, though? Because there might be a job out there if he can throw somebody out from home plate. If he can play a little catcher, throw somebody out.
I mean, and Tebow will never throw anyone under the bus except himself. So they've got that checked
out. No question.
Speaking of throwing things, the Cubs need a catcher. Maybe they can recruit the man from Baltimore who threw a beer can at Baltimore outfielders Hyunsoo Kim in the Orioles-Blue Jays playoff game. They'll have to wait till next year, unfortunately, as he has been sentenced to 200 hours of community service and has been banned from all Major League ballparks for the next season. As long as he compiles with that probation, he will avoid any criminal charges. Kim said that he received an apology letter from the man, and he believes that the sentencing will deter anyone from doing what he did in the future. And since that incident, the Rogers Center, where the Blue Jays call home, has served all alcohol in cups and not in cans.
Who was still serving beer in cans?
Toronto.
Only in Canada can you still get a beer in a can. Like, I thought everybody was beyond that. Like, that's like we used to play at Fresno, and they still serve beer in bottles. Like, are you guys stupid? Like... You're asking for somebody to throw a can.
Target practice?
Yeah.
All right, these players, now, you know, 200 hours of community service, is that enough?
Adam Jones doesn't think so.
What does Adam Jones say?
Jones said he was hoping for a harsher punishment. He said 200 hours is nothing. He says 1 year is forgettable.
Yeah, I'm kind of with him. Like, I've gone a year without going to a Major League Baseball game. And I haven't thrown anything at anybody.
So now you're going to throw something. So now you're going to go to a game where Tim Tebow's playing and you're going to throw beer at him.
No, I am not. Because trust me, now that this is on the air, somebody will throw a beer at Tim Tebow and I'll get blamed for it. Just because you said it over the air. Stop it.
I mean, yesterday you said you didn't like old white guys. Tim Tebow is an old white guy in his sport.
Yeah, he's pretty old.
Yeah,
pretty old and pretty white.
We've got you pinned here, Chris.
I said Phil Jackson is too old to have the job. I didn't say anything about white guys, just old guys like Phil Jackson. Hold on to sleep.
Gotcha.
Well, speaking of old guys, I don't know if you're aware of this, Darren. You almost had a new teammate at quarterback back in 2005.
Where?
By the name of Tony Romo.
Oh.
According to Matt Mosley, who retold the story that Romo told him on the golf course on his podcast with Ed Warder, a trade between the Packers and Cowboys was debated to bring Brett Favre to Dallas. The stopping point is the Packers demanded Tony Romo in return, and Romo said the Cowboys were unwilling to part with him. No timeline was given. However, we do know it was when Bill Parcells was the head coach. And that was sometime between 2003 and 2005, perhaps right after the Packers drafted Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I'm glad we didn't get him because at least I won a championship.
Oh, you wouldn't have gone anywhere in the playoffs?
I would have gotten to the playoffs a few times, but probably wouldn't have gotten past there.
Maybe you could have protected him a little bit better than the Cowboys could early in Romo's career, and he could have
gotten
a championship.
And did you ever play on field goal block team, or is that a different?
Oh,
different
yeah, games? No, I played on field
so
goal.
So he could have lateraled to you in Seattle.
Well, he would have had to have hold of the ball. He didn't have hold of the ball enough to actually lateral.
He didn't take off on a scramble. You could have gone out wide, caught a pass.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have scored a touchdown.
I know.
That would have been great.
That's a bane of my existence and my career. No touchdowns.
Well, Derek College, since you were an offensive lineman, did you really keep track of your stats?
No.
When someone told you, were you surprised?
The only one that mattered was sacks. If you're giving up sacks, then that was the only stat.
And it was always a good number for you, right? It was always really low?
Very low, usually.
So we'll end the sports update. Hanley Ramirez only hit .241 this season for the Red Sox, sat out his third consecutive game. He talked to the media, unlike David Price. And someone brought up, hey, Hanley, you know you're only hitting 5 for 35 against left-handed pitchers this year? To which Ramirez replied, quote, "It took you long enough to tell me that. I didn't know that for real. So, okay, after this conversation, let's see what's going to happen now."
I mean, that's funny because I've worked in minor league baseball for a little bit, and there is, I guess you have to work harder to find information. Like, they don't put the batting average on the big screen like they do at major league ballparks. And it's just amazing how little the guys who are actually playing know about their stats. Like, do you even know you're 2 for your last 17? No. Do you know you have a 10-game hitting streak? No. I was like, how do you, if it were me, and maybe it's just because I like following the numbers and following stats anyway, like, I would know everything about myself.
You seem like the kind of guy that know everything about himself. Like, baseball stats are weird anyways. The stuff they try, I mean, like, you watch those games, and they're like, yeah, he's 5 for 35 against left-handed pitchers west of the Mississippi
on
in
Thursdays.
Afternoon games. Like, you're like, I mean, come on, man. Like, no, I'm not tracking that stuff.
It's funny, the split stats, as if, like, are you trying to say that this means anything, or are you just trying to point out, like, a weird statistical anomaly?
Like you want to have, like, a weird conversation? Yeah, man, I'm struggling against left-handed pitchers in open-air stadiums.
But in domes, man.
But in domes, I got him. For some reason, I'm getting a lot better at it.
Well, before we end the update, Chris, speaking of stats, you did injure yourself yesterday in some basketball. What were your stats? How many points you have?
We're playing, this was 2-on-2. This was the first game where I was over at the courts by
the village. By ones?
Yeah, it was ones and twos, playing at 15.
Okay, so what was your stats? I mean, I'm assuming you had 15.
Nah, see, I got hurt kind of in the middle of the game, but I think our team were losing 8-7 at the time. I had 5 of the 7 for our team playing just 2-on-3. There was only 4 people
there. Is this pickup, or did you know the guy who was your
team? Nah, this is just pickup. The other 3 guys, though, knew each other. I was the only person.
So he was throwing, is what you're saying. He was maybe he was coming up a little lame.
No, I mean,
was it fair play?
He had a nice step back 3, and I was impressed with that. But I was doing the lion's share of the scoring, and also
shade on the
radio. Doing the one who had to. I'm the interior defender because I'm typically one of the taller ones when I play. Okay. So, like, I'm tough to get around when it comes to trying to get layups in traffic. So I'm the interior defender. And then my shot was working pretty good yesterday, but then trying to drive to the basket, right side of the lane, spinning towards it, tried to put up like a runner, and on the way down, just my ankle.
Did you call a foul on yourself, too?
No, I don't ever call fouls.
Somebody step underneath you? Is that how it went down?
Maybe. I need to see the replay. I need to see the replay.
Are they scouting from the Warriors on how to, you know, jab under you a little bit?
A little step under?
Yeah, a little bit of Zaza Pachulia dirtiness.
God, Zaza.
I got to take a look at the replay. I never did see whether...
I'm assuming your team lost, though.
Well,
of course,
left.
The shooter went
you
down.
You left?
Well, I was hurt, man. Well, I had to go back.
Didn't Brian Leftwich play a bowl game on, like, a broken ankle?
Okay,
just
I'm
have
not
your
Byron
teammate
Leftwich.
Carry you down the field.
I can't do that in basketball. You can't carry me.
Even Big Baby Davis played on a broken ankle.
Stop it, you guys. I did my best, but when my ankle went, so did my game. I can't play basketball on a hurt ankle. Find out how Broncos are doing in the NFL on Sports Radio The Ticket. 2 and 4 o'clock are the times on Idaho Sports Talk when we'll aim to profile Boise State player performances, playing time opportunities every day. We already talked about Darian Thompson and Dante Dion on this show. If you missed it, check out the podcast later on at ktik.com. Broncos in the NFL, 2 and 4 on Sports Radio, 1350 AM and 93.1 FM, The Ticket. Up next on Idaho Sports Talk, it's Quick Hits, where I talk to Darren College, and he gives me long, expanded answers about 4 rapid-fire topics, and one of these includes a new logo from UNLV. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number 1.
Well, instead of Bob, it's Darren. Those names don't rhyme, but we'll go with it anyway.
Close enough.
Yeah. Kansas football coach David Beattie, he had an interesting comment with the situation with Kansas. Apparently, according to CBSSports.com, they have a new law which allows students who are above the age of 21 to be able to carry a weapon on them concealed without having a permit. And the coach of Kansas, David Beattie, is kind of concerned about what that could mean for his football team, saying when you have a bunch of 16, 17, 18-year-olds around and you have these competitive, hyper-competitive, and emotional people, I fear for what's the worst thing that can happen. So I ask you, as somebody who's been around these competitive people, does Coach Beattie have something legitimate to be concerned about?
Well, I think for one, the loss is 21, right? So yeah. Hopefully most of his guys aren't doing it. Most of these guys come from different places where a lot of them are carrying guns anyways. Believe me, I've met a bunch of these guys, and a lot of them are carrying guns anyways. We live in a state here in state Idaho where people are allowed to carry a 21 and 18 outside the city, concealed permit anyways. I wouldn't be too worried. You probably need to take a look at the inside of your team if you're worried about guys shooting guys on their own team. So unless you're taking a couple million from me as a financial manager, you don't need to worry about yourself.
Topic number two.
UNLB came out with a new logo yesterday. All right, before Darren Collins, I want to hear Michael Fisher's opinion on this. We talked about this yesterday. Upgrade or downgrade UNLV's new logo?
Massive downgrade. I think they now take the cake for worst logo in college athletics.
The worst logo? The worst. How is it so much worse than what their logo was before?
It looks weird. It looks like New Mexico State. It looks like New Mexico State hired an artist who can't draw faces. So they just put his shadow in the background, and then they threw in a bunch of references to Vegas.
It's brutal. Like, it really
y'all
is. Like,
thank you.
It had to come with, like, a description so people knew what it was.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is the red star. This is mountains. This is the Vegas sign border. This is the mustache and the bandana. If you got to explain it that much to me, that's bad.
Man, you guys, I like it. Their old logo was kind of weird. It was just like this dude with the
heavy
gray mustache.
At least whoever drew that can do faces.
And yeah.
This new artist
hat.
Can't draw faces, Chris.
You don't like it? Looks sleek. It's not as bad as like the Clippers' new look. It looked like it was like an NBA Live creative team one.
It cost $50,000 to make.
It cost fifty grand to make that logo. Okay, now I'm with you.
I could have made that logo for $20 in MS Paint.
I'm not working for that cheap, but $25,000 I would have gave you something. $25,000, no problem.
Recolored the old logo and given it to him.
How is it that expensive? What do you need to do to create? Like, I know a lot of people who know InDesign who will do it for like just give them a nice dinner one night.
And it took a year. This is what they came up with. Over a year, and $50,000 is what they came up with.
Again, we need to tweet this out in case they haven't seen it. So at KTIK 93.1 FM, we'll tweet it out so they can follow along. But yeah, I don't hate it as much as you guys do, but the price to upgrade your logo these days?
It took a year.
So you guys are saying it's the worst logo in sports.
I said in college athletics.
Yeah, it's right up there. College athletics. I can't think off the top of my head one worse than that. So I could do a little research maybe, but like you remember the old Browns logo, the one that had like the elf on it?
Yeah.
Like that was bad. But at least I knew what that was.
True.
At least I'm like, oh, that's a bad elf. Like this, like I don't even know what it is. I had to go down and see the description.
It had the Vegas star on it. It's the shape of the
Vegas
sign.
No, as someone who's not from Vegas, I thought that was the Seattle Mariners star recolored red.
I thought it was like supposed to be the guy's eye or something like that. I got no idea what was going on there.
Topic number three.
The NBA released their top 15 most popular jerseys, and it's their typical names on there. The
Colin Kaepernick?
Who you see. His name was on there, too.
But, yeah, as an NBA.
Not the NBA, but like
no, I figured he sold NBA jerseys also.
The top jerseys when you get to the NFL. But when you talk about jerseys, I'm wondering, has anybody ever worn your jersey? Have you ever seen out and about somebody in a Darren Collins jersey?
Yeah. Let's see, my wife, my mom, my kids. But actually, I've seen normal fans out in a Darren Collins jersey.
That's what I want to know.
Yep, I have seen.
So what's your reaction the first time you were walking on the street and somebody was wearing a Darren Collins? I don't know what team it was when you were.
I've seen as a Packers one. I've seen my Packers one for sure. And then I saw a couple as a Cardinals, you know, there was some fans offensive linemen. It's not obviously your most popular jersey, but they've been out there. I think it's weird at first to see somebody in your jersey, but then it's cool. It's glad to see people, especially people that support offensive linemen. I think running backs, quarterbacks, receivers, that stuff's like super easy to get behind. But somebody that wears an offensive line jersey, you know, that person's dedicated.
You can't tell me nothing if I see somebody else wearing my jersey.
You got to stop limping first. I'll wear your jersey.
You'll wear the Chris Lewis jersey.
I'll
once
wear the
he
Chris
gets back
Lewis jersey.
On the court. All right.
No question.
That's my rehab motivation.
No question.
So I'm going to get back. I'm going to spend my time in a hyperbaric chamber like Terrell Owens getting ready for the Super Bowl. And I'm going to come out and catch, what was it, 10 passes for 140 yards like T.O. did, except the basketball equivalent. I'll hit a few step back threes and I'll see Darren Collins, former NFL player. Doesn't think enough about himself to wear his own jersey, but he's wearing the one that says Chris Lewis, number 4 on the back.
You Snapchat yourself doing a workout on your lawn coming back from this ankle injury, and I will wear the Chris Lewis jersey to the show, and I will do the whole segment in it.
Topic number four.
Is winning a championship worth dashing your kid's dream?
No
and I
question.
Say this because Danny Ainge, apparently he's trying to lure Gordon Hayward, the Utah Jazz, I was going to say superstar. He's not a superstar, but he's a good player, and that would help the Celtics win the championship. However, Danny Ainge's son is a politician who's running for election in Utah, and he certainly wants to have the people of Utah feeling pretty upbeat and happy, and they would be feeling upbeat and happy if they kept Gordon Hayward. If Gordon Hayward went to the Celtics and Danny Ainge stole him, I'm sure that would hurt his son's chances of getting elected in Utah. So is it worth stealing Gordon Hayward from Utah, even if it means your son loses an election and it crushes his dreams?
You're talking about like a four-year, $127 million contract. That's what they're talking about. It's on the line right here.
Yeah.
Gotta go, son.
The son's gotta go.
I gave you this opportunity through my own pockets. I gotta go. 4 years, $127 million. I gotta do what I gotta do.
Dag, man. So Danny Ainge is going to cost his son election in Utah.
He got to help out. Probably get elected in the other state.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
I'm concerned of how fast you said yes to is winning a championship worth dashing your kid's dream. Do you have experience in this or something?
Hey, I'm not saying I didn't
move
around.
You have a championship, so.
I had a championship, but I had my daughter. My daughter was at my championship, so we had them and then we dashed. So you know what? That's just poor family planning by them. That's what that is. That's poor planning.
Speaking of poor planning, if you have poor enough planning, it could destroy the entire locker room. And situation on this next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Half right. Chris Lewis here. Darren College in for Bob Beeler. Michael Fisher in his usual spot. One of the things in sports, it's really frustrating me. The automatic demolition of team chemistry.
Oh.
Like, there's a couple of examples. I want to get to one real quick where it's just, you should just know the rules at this point. There's no coming back from a team chemistry standpoint when you do a certain thing. Latest one from Los Angeles, Clipperland, where, of course, yesterday it was Chris Paul on a jet to Houston. He was traded for a bunch of little pieces. Now, Chris Paul gets to play with James Harden, where there's only one basketball, so we'll see how that worked. But Michael Eaves, who's an ESPN anchor and a Los Angeles-based reporter, he had a very interesting nugget on the failed relationship between Chris Paul and the head coach, Doc Rivers. And he said it started to deteriorate rapidly after the Clippers acquired Austin Rivers. Austin, of course, is the son of Doc Rivers. Several members of the team felt Austin acted entitled because his dad was both the coach and the president of basketball operations. In the view of tenured players, Austin never tried to fit in, and when the players tried to address the situation with him, he still did not respond in the way the core of the team wanted him to. It led to resentment within the locker room, which often played out during games. And one of Paul's biggest contentions with Doc, the coach and the president, was that Paul and other players felt Doc treated Austin more favorably than the other players. And one of the things where it came to a head is Paul's dissatisfaction when Doc Rivers had a proposed trade on his desk involving Carmelo Anthony. New York offered Carmelo, Sasa Vujacic to the Clippers in exchange for Jamal Crawford, Paul Pierce, and Austin Rivers, a deal in which Doc Rivers said no. The event led to Paul feeling like Doc Rivers valued keeping his son on the roster more than improving the team. So this is, to me, like a fascinating study of the father-son relationship within professional sports. There's not really too many examples of this, but I don't think that this is ever something that can interact, a father and a son within a team concept, when you're talking professional sports. Youth sports, it's fine. It's all about, you know, camaraderie, getting reps, and having fun at the youth level. So you see all the time parents coaching their son or daughter.
Yeah.
When it comes to professional sports, I feel like this is an automatic demolition of team chemistry. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Because somebody will get the feeling, no matter how good or bad the son is, that the son is getting preferential treatment. And as soon as you start to get that with the head coach and somebody on the team, kaboom, team chemistry is destroyed. There's no coming back from it.
Yeah, unless you're an undeniable superstar. Like, you know, if LeBron James' dad happened to be a coach and you're like, hey, we brought LeBron on, like, that's something you can swallow. Anything other than that, you're like, I even feel like anything past high school and you're starting to deal with some real issues. You know, Dan Hawkins dealt that with when Cody Hawkins came here and played at Boise State. It was one of those things where you're like, hey, Cody's going to have to prove himself as one of the guys. Now, he didn't become the starter while he was here, so it was something we really didn't end up having to deal with. But it was one of those things where you had to take a check and go, okay, like, how is this going to be different? And you look at the offer the Knicks made, Phil Jackson was stupid for making the offer anyways, but for them not to take that deal, I think that kind of cemented that for them. And you know, even last February, Glenn Big Baby Davis had been talking about the relationship that was going on there, the matter of the son being on the team and how he was being treated differently and all that kind of stuff. This was bound to backfire. If there's money on the line and there's grown men out there, you can't have your son, whether you're the coach or the GM or the owner, you got to put him somewhere else.
He's the coach and the GM, yeah, which means he's the guy exactly. who gets to hand out contracts. So last year when Austin Rivers signed a big extension that I don't know how many other teams would offer Austin Rivers that kind of money, when you're somebody else on that team, you have to be looking at it sideways, right? Like, what are you doing? You're just giving your kid a bigger allowance at the expense of perhaps making the team better because it's a salary cap sport. It feels like it's at least shady. And again, if this indeed is true, and who are we to doubt the report from Michael Ease, but Carmelo Anthony in exchange for Jamal Crawford, Paul Pierce, and Austin Rivers, if Doc Rivers didn't do that deal, he should be fired.
Absolutely. Like,
if he didn't do that deal, you have to think it has in part to do with the fact that he values his son in an unrealistic manner. He's an okay player, Austin Rivers. Yeah. He's somebody who can maybe average 8 or 9 points a game given the right circumstance, and he's a decent defender. But you get rid of him if it means you're getting Carmelo Anthony. But I also, if you put yourself as a parent, like, are you able to trade away your son? Are you able to do that? Like, that kind of seems a little bit cold beyond. That's why you can't let this situation even start.
Yeah, you can't let it happen. You can't put yourself in a situation where you're that. I mean, the contract they gave him was 3 years and over $35 million for a kid that, you're not lying, averaged 8.9 points. Like, I mean, to me, you got a chance to bring in on a star who makes your team better and gives you a chance to compete for a championship or at least put you in the playoffs versus keeping your kid. You got to make that deal every day. And you got to say, hey, son, this is the business. I'm going to put you on a team where they want you, and you can go over there and earn yourself. But you got to push yourself as far away from that situation as possible. You can't put yourself in a situation where you're judge, jury, and executioner on your own son's contracts, and you're handing him $30 million. Like, you're doing just what you just said. You just gave your son a fat contract, a big allowance. Like, how do I, as a man, walk forward and be like, my dad gave me everything. My dad gave me my money. Like, that's like, it's like these trust fund babies that are like, oh, my dad handed down, $40 million in a company, but I don't really do anything. I'm just a backup. Like, I don't really go into the office anymore. I just got lucky and got rich. Like, you gotta be kidding me.
It's an automatic team chemistry killer. And
you're blowing up the Clippers. The Clippers are done.
Yeah, they're off. They're done.
Everybody's going. I mean, most of their stars are talking about leaving. I mean, like, you've grenaded the team as much as Phil Jackson has.
Kaboom. Now, this joins the list. I think it might be the top of the list of automatic team chemistry killers. But you're somebody who's familiar with these locker rooms. I'm going to continue to bring up these other examples. It's just, I don't know how you go back from when you reach this certain point. Number one, snitching on a teammate on social media.
Yep.
Because we've had that example with D'Angelo Russell with the Lakers. As soon as that happened, you knew that it can't come back from that. As soon as you're putting out on the Snapchat about Nick Young stepping out on Iggy Azalea, there's no coming back from a team standpoint, right? Like, there's nothing you can apologize. There's no, all right, we cool. I know it was just a mistake. No, it's done.
Yeah.
You can't have that situation even enter the locker room.
Sorry, man. You got to go.
So that's one. Number two, the thing that happened with the Dolphins, and we haven't heard much related to that or even close to something like that happening since, but you taking the hazing / bullying thing public.
Yeah.
That is something where I don't know if you can ever come back. Once that happens, team chemistry is permanently altered.
For that person, yes. You know, for that person, he's going to be out of the picture. There's no coming back from that. You've kind of broken a silent code inside the locker room. And me being on that team and on that organization right after and getting to talk to those coaches, that staff, and those players in particular, you know, that's something that got blown out of proportion. Is not the right word, because I think for the standard Joe Blow out there in the public who sees that story is going to be mortified by it in its own way. But you have to realize in a lot of locker rooms, that's the day-to-day. That's mm-hmm. exactly how it works. It's a high-stress environment. There's a lot of egos, a lot of alpha males, and right or wrong or indifferent, that's how a lot of locker rooms are. And the strong will try to weed out the weak, and it happens. And you either adapt to it or you move on. But that went a little farther, obviously involving outside people. The fastest way to blow up a locker room is bringing anything that's in that locker room outside that locker room. That's going to get you killed. Like, that's going to get you in trouble. And I've seen it go as far as, like women will kill a locker room.
Okay, I want the stories.
Whether it be a side piece or for somebody on the team, or I've been in locker rooms where teammates have slept with other teammates' wives and caused blow-ups in that situation where a guy has to leave the team because he's threatened to come in and kill somebody. Like, it's that kind of stuff happens in locker rooms. So it's one of those things where, you know, women can get locker rooms in a lot of trouble. Look at the Kardashians. They've ruined more NBA careers than Phil Jackson. So,
all right. So, you know, the women thing. But how about owing money? I feel like that's a thing that the gambling that goes on, or the card games. And
I've seen dice.
With the Wizards, where Gilbert Arenas ended up bringing the gun, and you had Javaris Crittenden on that team, who also was bringing guns because people were owing people money within a team. I feel like that might be something that doesn't, you said, bring something in the locker room. You take it outside the locker room. That's an automatic way for it to get destroyed. But probably these stories are ones that stay within it. We don't ever find out about it, but it's something that probably happens, right?
Oh, yeah. There's gambling gets you in a lot of trouble. Like, now, I played with a lot of guys that were, you know, played dice, played cards. Lots of dudes that play cards, play spades, you know, spades tournaments from, you know, you're flying from one city to the other. You got 4 hours an hour playing. I've seen $30,000 change hands on a 3-hour plane ride in cards games. I saw one of my teammates have to pay off another teammate with a car. Like, that kind of stuff happens, you know, and I'll let those guys remain anonymous. But, you know, I've seen guys have to pay out quite a bit of cash, and people hold that stuff personal. You know, you owe another guy $30,000 in the locker room or $15,000 in the locker room. Like, they want that money, especially if they know what you're making. You know, and you got to try to go home and explain to your wife why you got to take a little extra out of the paycheck, you know, to pay off a card game on a New York to California flight or something like that. That's a hard thing to explain. Get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Shouts out to IK Ian Folly, the homie with the Jets. He wasn't getting his money, so he went up and punched the starting quarterback on the team.
Yeah.
How do you feel empowered enough to go up to the starting quarterback on the Jets and punch him in the jaw and broke his jaw and ended up costing him his career, right? He hasn't played in the game, or maybe he's played mop-up duty. He hasn't started right since that moment. So...
Yeah, like, you just ran yourself out of town. You cost yourself more money in the long run.
He owed that dude money, and he messed with the wrong one. I guess that's the only way to put it. He messed with the wrong one, and IK Ian Folly just said, I ain't having this mess.
You know what? The Kansas coach may need to be worried. Never mind. I take back. Kansas coach may need to be concerned about a shooting.
Inner team beefs. Cascade Raft and Kayak, they offer a half-price suite deal at KTIK.com. That's tomorrow at 9 in the morning on a half-day raft trip down the Rush on the Lower South Fork from Garden Valley to Banks. This 8-mile section of Rollicking Rapids launches you into an unforgettable whitewater experience. Go to KTIK.com. That's 9 in the morning tomorrow, and get this trip for only $27.50. Up next on Idaho Sports Talk, we are continuing our series on the Group of Five outside the Mountain West, the favorites in each of those leagues. It's time for the Sun Belt Appalachian State. They're known for upsets. Will they upset the entire Group of Five this year? We'll find out next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Idaho Sports Talk, but no Bob Beeler. Instead, Darren College is in for him. Michael Fisher, Chris Lewis here. And throughout the week, we've been talking about the Group of Five favorites and the other conferences that are not the Mountain West. These are some of the teams that if Boise State were to win the league, they'd be some of the other teams talked about in terms of that New Year's Six spot. And today, Sun Belt Conference, and we take a look at Appalachian State. Brett Strelo, who covers Appalachian State for the Winston-Salem Journal, he joins us now. Brett, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, so last year, this squad was 10-3, 7-1 in the Sun Belt. They had that game that I think a lot of people saw. It was one of their losses against Tennessee. They lost in overtime but played well. 20-13 was the final score. This is just their fourth year in the Sun Belt Conference, and they've been a pretty dominant team since they've arrived at the FBS level. Has the transition been about as easy as it looked?
Yeah, I think, you know, before them, Georgia Southern kind of made a similar transition and just going to the Sun Belt. You know, I think they started off 1-5 in their first FBS year, but since then, you know, it's something like 27-5 over the last 32 games. So a little bit of stub their toe to get going, but have it really rolling now. And, you know, the next step, I think, for them is, you know, almost 10 years since that memorable Michigan upset is, you know, not just playing some of those SEC or Power 5 teams close, but actually getting a win in that situation. So maybe, you know, couple that with a conference championship that would make them, you know, dangerous for that New Year's Six.
Now, speaking of that big breakthrough win against an FBS, or I guess a Power 5 team, how would the season have been different if that first game of the year against Tennessee would have been a win for Appalachian State?
Yeah, it's tough to kind of fear because they controlled that game from basically, I would say, start to finish. They never trailed in regulation, and you know, Tennessee ties it in part because App State missed the PAT, and then Tennessee's touchdown in overtime actually fumbled the ball in the end zone. But you know, from there, bounced back with a pretty dominant win against Old Dominion, which ended up being a lot better than everybody thought. And you know, they still did have the 45-10 drubbing at home against Miami, where you know, I think a lot of people thought that'd be real dangerous. But I think playing in Boone in front of a record crowd, I think maybe App was a little too hyped up. And so, you know, maybe that changes their chance to maybe threaten a Western Michigan. But they did lose at Troy, where they ended up sharing the Sun Belt Conference title with Arkansas State because of that loss at Troy. So it was kind of, before they were able to kind of close in strong fashion, it was going to be a lot of seasons of what if. They didn't play a ton of close games and kind of lost some of those that were really competitive because most of their wins in Sun Belt play were pretty lopsided.
Well, you guys actually got a really good record against the group of five guys. You're 20-2 in the last two seasons. What's that really say about your guys' head coach, Scott Satterfield?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely someone that has been mentioned for, you know, he's mentioned it for the Cincinnati job before they hired the Ohio State assistant. And I think you know, his name will continue to be, you know, one of those, maybe even along with Neil Brown at Troy that pops up. And, you know, he did sign a contract extension, which it only added one extra year. He was already signed through 2020 and now through 2021. So whether that's enough to keep him, they have a little bit more of a competitive financial kind of package for him. But he's definitely going to be a guy as long as they keep rolling that, you know, even locally, maybe if some Power 5 teams in the ACC, if they ever change a coach, I think they'd look his way as one of those options. So,
talking Sun Belt Conference, Appalachian State, Mountaineers, Brett Strelow of the Winston-Salem Journal, as we profile the teams that are the favorites in the group of five leagues. Now, Appalachian State were a run-heavy offense last year. I believe it was upwards of near 60% of a run-pass ratio. So in a pass-happy college football, how has this run-heavy offense worked in the Sun Belt?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of old school, and you know, playing up in the mountains where it's a little bit colder, windier weather. They do have a tradition of, you know, kind of trying to pound the ball on offense and play good defense. And, you know, aside from that Miami game, you know, they were right up there among the national leaders and, you know, limiting teams. They move the ball on, but don't score a lot. So that's kind of their MO a little bit. You know, it's a little bit of a spread option attack where they take their shots down the field to keep you honest. But you know, last year they had Marcus Cox and Jalen Moore, who Marcus Cox was a senior who leads the school's all-time leading rusher. But the actual Sun Belt offensive player of the year was Jalen Moore, who will be back for his junior year. So with him back and then Terrence Upshaw, who was an academically ineligible last season, they still should have a pretty good 1-2 punch. And I think that'll still be their ID. They have a 4-year starter quarterback in Taylor Lamb, who, you know, not particularly flashy, but kind of gets the job done. But I think still they'll probably, you know, rely mostly on trying to move the ball on the ground.
You talked about how big an opportunity Tennessee could have been. You got a huge opportunity next year, open up again at the Hedges at Georgia. How big an opportunity is that for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if somehow they can pull out a win there, I mean, trying to figure out, you know, what Georgia is. I think Georgia, you know, started slow, but finished a lot stronger under Kirby Smart, and I think people think they're probably a top 15, top 20 level team. So I think winning there, especially, you know, getting people's attention the way they played at Tennessee will be tougher. But I am curious to see. I mean, they also have Wake Forest coming to Boone, where, you know, App might be favored in that game. If they can do that and they have a really friendly conference schedule, if they can get to the end of the year with either one loss, and that one loss was in the Hedges, and they have another victory against a Power 5 team, you know, you guys probably know the bath better than me. Is that enough to really threaten for that spot, even if you aren't undefeated? Or, yeah. You know, but who? So
It seems like, you know, that's been the recipe, if you will. You take care of your conference and you win it, which, of course, you have to be the conference winner, and you have a Power 5 win on your resume. You can even afford to have a loss if the other group of five champions don't have as strong of a resume. And remember Boise State doing it a couple of years ago. That was a team that at one point was 3-2 and ended up winning out from there. And at the end of the year, it was clearly the best of the group of five. Now, with that in mind, as we're joined by Brett Strelo of the Winston-Salem Journal talking Appalachian State and the Sun Belt, Boise State has Troy on the schedule. I don't see Troy on the schedule for Appalachian State this year. So when we're talking Sun Belt contention, Troy is going to be near the top. What does Troy have, and how does that compare to Appalachian State?
Yeah, I think most people kind of think, you know, the three best programs last year were Arkansas State, App, and Troy, and they all kind of trade a little bit of, you know, Troy beat App, but then Troy lost to Arkansas State, and kind of Arkansas State got upset by a different team. So if App can go through unblemished, I think the one problem is strength of schedule, because they don't play Troy or Arkansas State. They don't even play South Alabama, which is another bowl team that kind of slipped in, you know, had some good non-conference wins, but actually struggled in the Sun Belt. So, you know, I think Troy, I mean, they've got LSU on the schedule, and they do have to play Arkansas State to close the regular season. So, you know, that might be the biggest challenge for Troy, but I think a lot of people think, just with the schedule the way it lays out for App State, avoiding some of those other heavyweights in the league, that, you know, they're, anything less than an undefeated season in the league would probably be a disappointment for those guys in Boone.
Trying to take advantage of a favorable schedule. Brett Strelo of the Winston-Salem Journal and Appalachian State, we appreciate the time, and we're looking forward to seeing what the Mountaineers can do in the Sun Belt.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Again, that's Brett Strelo of the Winston-Salem Journal. I feel like out of all the teams that we've profiled, and of course Western Kentucky out of Conference USA, Toledo out of the MAC, you had South Florida out of the American Conference, App State today out of the Sun Belt, I say App State maybe has the toughest number two in terms of right, you know, at the same level as them, but they don't play any of those others. South Alabama, they don't play Troy. But those teams, if you take a look at these preview magazines, when it comes to a talent standpoint, they think highly of them. It's just Appalachian State gets the scheduling break, so that's why they're considered the favorite in these leagues. Works out that way sometimes.
Yeah, sadly, it's going to be, they'll be the best team with the hardest road, though. Again, the schedule's too weak, and most people are going to look at that and say, well, they didn't play anybody, it doesn't really matter. If they're not undefeated, then they don't got a chance. I mean, they would, as a team who's playing well and playing strong, they probably had their fingers crossed, a little bit of hoping to have Troy on their schedule.
That's true. Up next, it's a sports update.
Well, Tim Tebow off to a fast start. At this rate, he may be in Double-A before we even get to the update. Plus, Darren College almost had a different quarterback when he was at Green Bay. If you trust a current CBS analyst, that's coming up next on sports on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. We'll start the Ticket Sports Update with the favorite athlete of Chris Lewis. Tim Tebow made his high A debut yesterday for the St. Lucie Mets in a doubleheader. Hit a home run in his second game, though his first day of playing high A baseball, same as he did in the Arizona Fall League and in low A ball. Finished the doubleheader 3-for-5, one home run, two RBIs, and passed Michael Jordan on the career home run list at 4.
That's, you passed the GOAT, right? When you passed Jordan, you are now the greatest of all time. LeBron James, he couldn't even pass Michael Jordan. So the fact that Tim Tebow could pass Michael Jordan, we have to call him the greatest.
He also has more home runs than LeBron has finals wins.
Is he now possibly one of the greatest basketball players of all time also?
Yes. In fact, he's the best tennis player, too. He could actually beat number 700 on the tennis tour. Like, you know, McEnroe be saying Serena Williams is only number 700. Yeah. McEnroe would say Tim Tebow.
Should I pick
one.
Him up in my fantasy golf league for the Open Championship?
That might actually be a smart move too. You know what you're doing with that.
That's true.
How do you enjoy being the champion? How much longer are you the champion for?
I believe the Open Championship is around July 20th. So I've got a couple more weeks to really just brag to JP that I know more about golf than he has ever forgotten.
I'm going to reach out to somebody in Vegas to see if there's a parlay bet on Tebow making it to the MLB.
Tim Tebow making it to the MLB.
There's got to be one, right?
Combine that with Conor McGregor beating Floyd Mayweather. Make yourself a good bit of money.
$10 could turn into 10 grand that fast.
Well, speaking of money, the NBA free agency is around the corner. Gordon Hayward is the biggest name on the market, and according to ESPN, he sort of has a list made out. He will start his free agency meetings in Miami on Saturday when free agency begins. Then move on to Boston, where his former college coach Brad Stevens is the coach, and then go back to his current team, the Utah Jazz. Those are the only three teams he currently has booked. The Jazz can offer Hayward a 5-year, $180 million deal, while the Celtics and Heat can only offer him 4 years and $127 million.
To give you some of the details of this, though, for I think he will be aiming to sign a 3-year deal because that would make the most sense from a next extension standpoint, because he'll reach that new Chris Paul level where you can negotiate that deal when you're a certain age to give yourself that last big extension that can be upwards of, you know, I think 150 to 200 million or something like that. So I don't think the fact that the Jazz can offer him an extra year and more money based on that extra year is really a benefit here if he's looking to sign just a 3-year deal anyway.
Yeah, if you want that extra chance, you talk about, really, CP3 for that matter, you're talking about the deal he can sign. I think they said 5 years, $207 million or something like that. And if you go to a place like Houston where you're not paying any tax on it anyways, you're talking about another $15 million in your pocket. So I'd be taking that 3-year deal, looking for that one more bump to get that last big one.
You compare those taxes that are in Houston non-existent to the ones in Los Angeles?
13.3%, I think it is right
that
now.
That is nuts.
Mm-hmm. And Massachusetts apparently also looking at upping a millionaire's tax. Tanner Ainge all over it, congressman in Utah, so maybe he has his work cut out for him. Speaking of Boston, besides Gordon Hayward, another name they pursued, not during free agency, but in a trade, that'd be Jimmy Butler. This is an introductory news conference for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he said if you have a problem with him, you just go ahead and call him.
Phone's in my back pocket right now. If whoever has anything to say to me, feel free. 773-899-6071.
There you go. Jimmy Butler's phone number.
I mean, that's another level.
I did see a tweet. He's apparently FaceTiming fans who want to call him. So after the show, Chris, maybe FaceTime him.
My question is, and I could probably look this up, is he married? Like, is he out here trying to get some of them, you know,
trying to get
have
some
have a good time?
Trying to get some pics?
Yeah, trying to. He's Minnesota. He's in a new place now. He needs to know the area, if you know what I mean.
I mean, this is that faster than Tinder.
Exactly. You got the. You don't even need to open your phone app. They can. They'll just hit you up. Like that's.
Yeah,
he's smart.
Playing
with
the
this.
Game.
I got a phone number. I got an Uber. That's all he needs, right?
Now, will he change his number? Because you just gave the entire world your cell phone. He's getting texts from every fan. Every
how many Draymond Green ass texts do you think he's getting?
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to know if he's talking. To, you know, is he really talking to his haters though? And. Who's got time for that? Like, you just signed a big time deal. Like, who got time for that?
Do you think he went into that with the plan of giving away his phone number? Let's hear it again. Did he, like, did it sound like he was in the middle of.
I just closed
it. You closed it?
I closed. I thought we were done. I didn't.
Man, you can go find it. If you really want to call Jimmy Butler, you can find the number.
Because I want to know, did that sound like something was a smooth? He went right into it knowing he wanted to give his phone number out, or he got caught in an answer like, yo, I'm so bold. I'm so me. You can't get it to me. You know what? I'm just going to give my phone number.
That was his answer to a question. They asked him, you know, how's it feel? Stuff coming out. And he said, you know, you want to call me? Call me.
You know what? Text me on the show. It's 773-899-6071. That's supposed to be Jimmy Butler's number. That's his number. Text me. I want to know if anybody's reached out and talked to this guy. Yes. And if, ask him for some money. He just came up flush. I could use
$100. 773-899-6071. He really did just give out his phone number. Bill Walton did that recently.
Yeah, Bill Walton did that as well.
He was broadcasting on the was it Final Four on Westwood One on this station. And he just gave away his cell phone number.
Who would you rather talk to?
Oh, Bill Walton. Not even close. Bill Walton, you can just say hello, and he'll go on for 10 minutes after that talking about stories on, I went to the woods and put on a tie-dye shirt, and I saw the greatest jump shot I've ever seen. And, yeah, you can just be on the – just put it on speakerphone while you know, continue to clean the rest of your room or something like that. Jimmy Butler – I don't really know if he has that kind of personality.
Well, college, you play with the Packers, right?
Yep.
Did you play with Brett Favre?
Of course.
How, would you like to be coached by Brett Favre?
No.
Managed by Brett Favre?
No.
Well, I'm sorry, then. Maybe you don't want to get back to the NFL. Brett Favre was on the Wisconsin Wild and Tusk show on Thursday on ESPN, and he said, you know, when asked about getting back to the NFL, he said it's crossed his mind about being either a coach or a GM. He said he really enjoyed the competitiveness of being a high school coach after he retired. And he's thinking about becoming a coach or a GM in the NFL.
He just doesn't sound like the kind of person who would be really good at management. I don't know if discipline was exactly his
strength. He doesn't have any sons, does he?
Yeah.
Not enough Suns that he can put on the team.
Yeah, and exactly. Signed a big contract and not trade.
Yeah, I don't think that would be the problem. My problem with this is that if he becomes back in the public light, will he give out his cell phone number? We know what happens with Brett Favre and cell phones.
That sounds like his number's already given out. Like, he's doing fine. Zell and Butler got the same idea.
Why did he see those incoming messages? But you have a relationship.
Wait, are we talking about
Favre,
voicemails?
Quote unquote relationship with him.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not Tiger Woods.
I need you to do me a huge favor.
This is the low of
can you please,
voice messages.
Take your name off your phone. My wife went through my phone and maybe calling you.
That's bad.
So if you can,
desperate.
Please take your name off that. And we call it just have it as a number.
You know, 2020 hindsight.
Have it as your telephone number. Okay, you gotta do this for me.
Come on, please.
Butler might be playing the long game.
So, all right, explain the long game.
If he's got the same problem as Tiger Woods got, he just gave his number to everybody. Said, honey, I don't know who this girl is, man. I gave my number to the whole country.
That's true.
Whole world got my number.
That's what it was. Okay, we found it out
long
here.
Con.
He was, wow. All right, long he was stepping it. Out, yep. And, you know, he just wanted to make sure that, all right, this girl's going to be hitting me up, and I'm in another relationship, so I don't want it to be suspicious. So I'll have everybody text me.
No question.
That way, that one number that comes across the phone, the wife or the girlfriend can't be too suspicious. Everybody's got my
honey,
number.
These girls,
point.
They're wild out here. I mean, look at this. He just moved to a new city. The other girl's getting pissed he left. She was going to be hitting him up. He's like, look, girl, they're wild out right here. I got pictures and texts from everybody.
Got it.
He ain't stupid.
All right, this went from Brett Favre back to Jimmy Butler. But Brett Favre be good at this?
No.
Coach, GM?
Yeah, you know, I think the high school thing works. Like, but he was a freelance guy, man. He was a shoe from the hip. He was the gunslinger. Like, I don't see him out there mentoring kids. He said, he put out he didn't want to coach Aaron Rodgers at all. So, you know, why does he want to go out and all of a sudden give his secrets away?
And we'll end the sports update. Talk about Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. Coolidge, you almost had another quarterback in Green Bay.
Oh, who?
Tony Romo.
Ah.
According to Tony Romo, he told Matt Mosley, who recreated the story on his podcast with Ed Warder, two were golfing, and Romo apparently told Mosley that back in 2005 or so, when Bill Parcells was the head coach, the Green Bay Packers were looking to trade Brett Favre. They talked to the Cowboys. Everything was a done deal, except they wanted this undrafted free agent named Tony Romo, and the Cowboys said, no, thank you. And he stayed a Cowboy.
Now, Darren, you laugh, but from 2004 to 2010, who would you rather have had as your quarterback, Tony Romo or Brett Favre?
Well, Brett Favre was long gone. I had Aaron Rodgers by then.
Oh, sure.
And I was winning a championship in 2010. What was Romo doing in 2010?
Probably back surgery.
Yeah.
Something golfing. Like that. Has anybody made more for doing less than Tim Tebow? I don't know. Green Bay would have ran him out of town.
These quarterbacks can't keep up with them. It's time to tailgate, though, at Gaze and Prater this Friday from 3 until 6 with a live edition of Idaho Sports Talk. If you're near Boise State tomorrow afternoon, watch the show and have a happy hour refreshment with a big bite to eat. It's Caves and Prater, tailgate sports bar off Capitol at the entrance to Ann Morrison Park this Friday. Again, that's tomorrow, 3 to 6 on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Up next, the things you missed on the show today on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Some of the things that you miss on Idaho Sports Talk today with Bob Beeler out. Darren Cottledge is in, Chris Lewis, Michael Fisher, and what you missed. It's sponsored by ProRam Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, accessories located right inside Wesley's Garden Lanes in Garden City.
Well, big thing you missed, talk about Broncos of the NFL. We had James Cratch on. He's the beat reporter for the New York Giants. Darian Thompson did get hurt, but Cratch said that before he got hurt, Thompson was looking like a shoe-in to be the starter at free safety.
He was head and shoulders above the rest of the safeties kind of competing for that job opposite Landon Collins. The Giants, they love him. They think he's going to be a real player. They have been nothing but cautious with his foot and everything, you know, kind of bring him along slowly because, you know, they're kind of treating him like fine china. They think he is going to be a major impact player for them potentially.
I wish the Sixers took this approach with the guys that they were high on. Just treat them like fine china. Don't break them and have them play their rookie year. I feel like with the Sixers, man, I'm getting burned by guys we expect to play big roles in year number one, and they can't do it. With Darian Thompson, you know, two games into his rookie year, he gets hurt and misses a good chunk of the season. His backup came on and actually played pretty well, but James Cratch did say that Darian Thompson still is supposed to get that job, even though his backup played pretty well in 14 games when he was gone, that Thompson still provides a little bit more upside to that defensive back, the secondary safety position, opposite of Landon Collins. So I'm interested to see how it works out. That'll be one of the stories we follow in the preseason, how Thompson is winning his position battle.
I thought the Sixers sucked on purpose. I thought that was that.
Well,
that,
I
that
mean, was a part of it.
You know,
get early picks, but you know, Ben Simmons getting hurt, that wasn't part of the plan. Ben Simmons was supposed to play last year.
All right.
Was it because he's eating too many cheese sticks? Or cheese steaks?
If you're going to get hurt, that's a good way to do
better
so.
Better be loaded up on cheese steaks.
See, I hurt my ankle, and I didn't get any cheese sticks. I haven't had a cheese steak in a long time. That's the worst part about being away from Philly.
I was going to say, you can't have a cheese steak here, right?
No.
Because it's just going
to
be...
It's bad. I'm sorry to the cheesesteak places out there.
I feel like they understand if a Philly guy is trashing on their cheesesteak.
Yeah, because you just go...
Are you a Cheese Whiz guy, though?
I can do it. Provolone's my favorite on a cheesesteak.
You're not the believer that Cheese Whiz was the first cheese for cheesesteaks?
I heard that. I don't believe it. I think provolone was the first official, because I saw a documentary on cheesesteaks once, and they said the Cheese Whiz was the first one was a myth. It was actually provolone, but Cheese Whiz was early, and it kind of, you know, made it a little bit different than... It was like a differentiator.
Where you got time to watch a cheesesteak documentary?
Who made a cheesesteak documentary?
Dude, what dude, like, who's dying right now? Just some obese dude. I mean, just, like, stage 2 diabetes. Like, I'm trying to do a cheesesteak documentary before I kick the bucket. I mean, are you kidding me?
There's a lot of different
You and Butler
spots.
Got nothing but time, I guess.
I'm telling you, I need to find this cheesesteak documentary and show you. Well, you guys would be on the first flight to Philly.
You guys, you'd be rehabbing that ankle for the next 6 to 8 weeks probably. So once you got time to watch some more documentaries.
See, right, college, provolone, the best cheese? You were in Green Bay.
I'm a provolone guy also on my cheesesteak, guys. I'm not a big fan of cheese. I'm not really sure what Cheese Whiz is. I thought that stuff was invented like during the Vietnam War, so I don't know how it could have possibly been the first cheese on a cheesesteak.
You stop lying.
Well, sticking to New York, Darian Thompson, he might have been a shoo-in for starters, and one other Bronco there, and Dante Dion. He practiced squad last year, and Cratch was talking about the depth at cornerback and said there's a real chance Dion can make this roster.
You know, usually they carry five cornerbacks. There's probably going to be two jobs kind of way up for grabs in camp this year, and Dion's one of several guys competing for that, but the Giants love Dante Dion.
So Dante Dion, all 5'9", 160 pounds of him. That'll always be the challenge.
Cheese steaks.
Cheese steaks.
He needs
what
to
it
get
needs.
Some cheese steaks.
Yeah.
He's not too far away from Philly. Take the trip down the Jersey Turnpike.
What is New York? Is that pizza?
Slices, baby. Slices. And the New York hot dog, right?
Yeah. The thin crust. You got the Coney Island.
Coney Island.
Get some hot dogs.
Yeah. So he can load up. I'd like to see him be there, man. I'd love to see two BSU guys knocking it out in the backfield.
I mean, we're here at Boise State for interceptions. I mean, Giants need to force some turnovers. Put those two back there.
No question.
And talk about how he said the Giants love Dion. That's not just the Giants. The fans apparently love him, too. He's even more popular than Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr.
During training camp, they tweet out pictures and little video snippets of guys in action. And Dante Dion videos and photos would get hundreds of retweets and likes. I mean, we're talking more than like Eli and Odell would. So I think that there's clearly Dante Dion has become a fan favorite for a guy who really, you know, hasn't played a whole heck of a lot.
All right, so I see. Dante Dion, he's the real star.
Can Boise
New
take
York.
Credit? Do you think it's a bunch of Boise State people?
Just retweeting everything
that has Boise State Bronco
so.
On it?
That's part of it, but as part of it, it's New York, baby. And Dante Dion, he might not have the size in terms of 6'2", and he might not have the weight, only being a 160, but he has a good smile. We know that. His smile comes across some of these pictures. So maybe if you combine the smile of Dante Dion with the hair of Odell Beckham Jr., what do you have?
A superstar?
You have an absolute monster.
Is he
going to
steal
City.
The kicking net from Odell this year? If he's that popular?
If he's that popular, he's going to take Odell's girl like that.
Would that break up the locker room, Darren?
No question. But you might be able to get away with it in New York, though. You've got the fans behind you. You got to have a Twitter presence. You got to have a social media presence when it's New York. You're doing the right thing right now.
The last thing you need to do, though, Dante Dion, you're a fan favorite now. Do not join Odell Beckham on that boat trip to Miami in between weeks. That's a great way to get the fans against you.
Take some tips from Carmelo Anthony, man. Fans can be against you or they can be for you. You make the choice.
Or marry Lala Anthony.
That also helps.
Jeff Kays in the studio with more Idaho Sports Talk coming up 3 until 6. What's going on your version of IST?
Well, we got a new logo contest. It's really not that unique, but, you know, Boise State has three different marks. I don't know if you guys, you know, have seen it or not, but college, you guys were the era that started the new logo, weren't you? Didn't you bust out the new logo?
Yeah, I came here and we had the old logo and we were the part of the brand new logo. We were the change.
Yeah, I remember that was a bust out deal. And, you know, Kurt Absey, who'll join us at 5 o'clock, was all over that. That was a big shift for the merchandise sales as well as all the wins that started happening as well. And you got the B, and then you've got the oversized head, which I tend to like that, but I know it's Boise State, and this is all because UNLV has changed their logo and dropped any identification of who they are. They don't have UNLV in their logo anymore, which I think is a mistake. But go to our 931-KTIK Facebook page, take a look at that. Plus, Jamar Taylor joins us at 4 o'clock, and you know, Jamar's in Cleveland now, and a lot of guys didn't want to go to Cleveland. But
nope.
He did the LeBron. He went from Miami to Cleveland, right?
You know, Jamar likes it there. They must have wanted him, and he wanted a place where he could start, and he's getting that opportunity. So our Broncos in the NFL series will continue at 4 o'clock. You know, I was thinking, where do you get a good hot dog in Boise? Sonic is the only thing that came to mind because Lacey will drag herself there once in a while. But is anybody else a hot dog retailer in this city?
Not
Albertsons.
Yeah, that's why I go to the grocery store and just put one on the grill. But as for ready-made hot dog, didn't Burger King start doing that mess?
Like, well, that almost doesn't count, right? I mean, yeah. We have no
local. How does Burger King not count, but Sonic does?
But Sonic doesn't count either. I'm saying that you got to have a local.
We get ourselves a KTIK little truck. We get ourselves a food truck. We start selling the hot dogs in town.
We try to take advantage of the lack of market supply.
Yeah,
supply
yeah, and that, demand. That our calendars. That and the new calendars. We're good.
Knockwurst, bratwurst.
We got this.
Links, no
brat or right? Hot dog. You out there chilling on? You're chilling on at camping or whatever. You want a hot dog or a brat? Which one are you going for?
Probably the brat. Higher fat content usually.
Yes.
When I'm camping, it's got to be a hot dog because you got to do brats the right way. I mean, I spend too much time in Wisconsin. Like, if you ain't cooking brats the right way, they're not done. So if I'm camping, it's a hot dog. If I'm at home and I'm cooking with my boys, it's going to be brats all the way.
That's fair.
Do you boil them in beer, college, or how do they do it?
Beer and onions, man. There ain't no other way to do it.
You got
to
put cheese on it, though?
Oh, I mean, you can put everything on it. They ain't afraid of a calorie in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I promise you that much.
That cheese.
They ain't afraid of a calorie.
Dang, all right, I'm going to go because I want to eat now. Like, get out of here. I can't move because my ankle still hurts, and I'm going to limp all the way to a spot for me to get either a hot dog or a brat or a burger.
You keep
or
limping. Keep limping.
Ribs. I brought ribs the other day into the studio, and people were, like, upset with me, looking at me with, like, three heads. Like, why are you bringing them ribs? We're not bringing enough for everybody.
Don't build up too much hate because I'm going to be stuck here wearing your jersey.
That's true. And you're going to get stuff thrown at you. Mm-hmm. Michael Fisher had some of the ribs the other day. You enjoy them?
They're great ribs. I'm just hurt you didn't invite me over for the actual cooking.
That's true. I figure that you're too busy, but you're not. So I want to invite you next time.
I mean, just let me know.
I'll have to school you in Madden, though. That is the price of admission.
But you don't have to walk on an ankle to play Madden.
All right. So, Darren, we'll see you next week. It'll be me and Fish tomorrow. Bob's still out. Idaho Sports Talk continues with Caves and Prater next, 3 to 6 on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM The Ticket.